Thank you. And thank you, Chris. Yeah. All right. So I know some of you were here last week, and some of you may have watched the show on Facebook or on YouTube. And I spoke about uncertainty last week. And the gist of it was is that we live in an uncertain universe. It's just the nature of being, that life is impermanent. The only thing that we can really count on is impermanence. Impermanence is a permanent condition. Oddly paradoxical, which I love, but you know, I suggested that myself and other spiritual teachers suggest that when we are faced with issues of impermanence, that we can look at some of the strategies, the ineffective strategies that we have for managing impermanence, such as addiction or anger or sadness, and then trying to stuff those feelings. And what I suggested last week was that we feel the feelings, that it only takes about 90 seconds, and then they're done. And then we start looking for where we are layering the story on top of the feelings. So I'm absolutely sure that everybody did that all last week, all the time, and we've got that down pat now, correct? Right, yeah. Well, I know I did it once, and it went pretty well, but I don't know that I'm necessarily done with this topic. So I decided to continue the conversation about uncertainty, because there is a place in our lives that is constant, that is not only related to the pandemic or the state of the world right now with all of the upheaval that's going on, but it's just a constant factor in our lives, and that is conversation. Then when we are relating to another human being, there is often a sense of uncertainty that we're not even aware of because we're so busy either trying to change them or telling them what we think or what have you, right? Am I the only one? No? Okay. And so what I'm thinking about in terms of this is that, yes, we are in this special period of history. This people will read about us in history books, maybe not as individuals, but about this group. And, you know, this period of history has the capacity to ruin our spiritual practice. I remember I was talking to myself going, you know, I was really on a roll with that spiritual practice before this stupid pandemic struck, you know? And then it came to me, oh, wait, the pandemic is your spiritual practice. And this is your holy vestment. And we're dealing with the paradox of trying to be closer while remaining 6 feet apart. Or on Zoom. How crazy is that? But how wonderful it is to have to deal with that and to go deeper with it and to find that love is stronger than distance and comfort is stronger than a mask and that security is not what we thought it was. Security is in the groundlessness that we feel when we let go of our attachment to certainty and allow ourselves to be uncertain, recognizing that that is a portal to infinite possibilities. So how are we going to do that? Anybody? Well, no, I kind of wish this talk was a class because I'm not the expert on this, hardly at all. I'm not the expert, but I'm learning a lot about it through this pandemic. One of the things that I've been doing every week is, and Chris, this is your chance to start getting ready with your props, is putting a post on Facebook, and we'll need a wide shot for this so everybody can see that Chris is going to cleverly pass me the holy basket of responses to Facebook. Thank you. Okay, wait, just let me sanitize them for a minute. Okay. Okay. And I just love physical comedy, you know. Okay. And then we have this, and I'll pick three. And this, and this. So I asked people, what stands in the way of your best listening? Because honestly, listening really carefully and not anchoring to our normal positions that we take in arguments, that makes us a bit vulnerable. And sometimes something stands in the way of that vulnerability. So I asked our brilliant congregation on Facebook what was standing in the way of their best listening. And before I read these three answers that I picked, all of the answers were wonderful, but I do have an objection. I think that most of you were spying on me and getting inside my head because I related to absolutely every single answer that people put on Facebook. It's like, oh yeah, I do that. Oh yeah, I do that too. That keeps me from listening. So what do we have here? Ooh, okay. How funny. Michelle doesn't listen well sometimes because she thinks she knows it all. Anybody? Okay. All right. Let's see. I love calling people out. Oh, yeah. Melissa sometimes doesn't listen well because of her eagerness to be heard and understood. Anybody? Okay. And let's see. Who else do we have? This one's really short. I'll pick another one. Jonna doesn't listen sometimes because of her ego. Anybody? That's a short one. I'll pick one more. One more just for fun. Gia doesn't listen well. Gia, who sings here, you know, sweet Gia, because she thinks she already knows everything. Kind of similar to the first one, right? So that, and there were so many things that came up, fear and afraid of being misunderstood. I think that was part of it. And planning what you're going to say when the other person's speaking. Anybody? Feeling like they might rope you into some type of opinion that you don't really share and you won't be able to do anything about it. All of that stuff interferes with our listening, and those are all strategies. They're all strategies to help us keep from feeling vulnerable. And, you know, oddly, it may feel like it's working. It may feel like, oh yeah, good, that was successful, I feel less vulnerable. But I think that, as it said in the reading that Hugh did, that the future of the world and the generation of something great to come out of this time of upheaval has less to do with our power and less to do with our being right than it does with our vulnerability and our willingness to listen and our willingness to be present and our willingness to let go of that which we have a grip on, right? Not all the time. Sometimes we are right. You know, there's always that thing, do you want to be right or happy? And I'm like, yeah, I want to be both because sometimes I'm right, okay? it's just true. Sometimes you are right. But it said in the reading, and I really like this, it doesn't mean that you need to let go of your opinions. It just means that you need to listen to the other and seek to understand them and then take it from there, and perhaps something great and new and wonderful will grow from that place of deeper understanding. But you know what? The way that we're made is kind of stacked against us a bit in our ability to listen and be vulnerable. You know, we are descendants from the animal kingdom, and I, as you know, I observe the animal kingdom on a very regular basis and all kinds of ways. Barking at the mailman because he's going to steal Barty's stuff, and, you know, just all this territoriality stuff, all this tribalism, and humans, we have some of that going on too. We are tribal beasts, and we will do what we can to secure our place in the scheme of things because we're afraid for our survival. We want to survive. But there are certain things, certain ways that our brains function that at one time were possibly helpful and still may be helpful, but they're not always helpful. One of those things is our tendency to stereotype and to act as if the stereotypes are true, to identify with the stereotypes that are imposed upon us, but also to over-identify with the stereotypes that are imposed upon others through an unconscious race consciousness, human consciousness event that is just hanging around us like air molecules, like Pigpen's cloud, I like to call it. It's like this cloud that's hanging around us. As I've been telling you just about every week, with all of the additional focus on racial tensions coming up in the United States and all over the world, I've been doing a lot of reading actually a very wide variety of things. A lot of authors who are shining light on the conditions that create systemic racism, and at the same time also reading authors that are concerned about unintended consequences of activism, that there may be a place where a new group is imposing and forcing another group to feel the same way, and it's probably more gray than that. It's probably more gray and involving more listening and more vulnerability. So I've been reading both and digesting both, and I don't have a clear answer yet, but I don't want a clear answer yet. One of the books that I'm reading is called Whistling Vivaldi, and it's a book that's written by a black professor in Chapel Hill, who is a social scientist, and he wrote this book because he's writing, he researches the tendency that our human brain has to stereotype and then to identify with stereotypes, and how this impacts us as a society and also as individuals. The title, Whistling Vivaldi, gives an example of stereotyping. So there was a, and Vivaldi's a classical composer, right? Okay, so could have said Whistling Mozart, but the story is about Vivaldi. So anyway, he was interviewing this young man who was a graduate student in psychology in Chicago. And this young man eventually went on to be a journalist. But when he was a graduate student in Chicago, he's African American, he's black, and he would dress like a college student, and he would walk through Hyde Park at night, and he would see white people passing him start looking concerned and edging away and linking arms and acting as if they were afraid of him. And he felt badly about that. He felt badly that he was inspiring fear in others, but he also felt like he might be in some danger. And so out of nervousness, he started whistling. And I realized that he was a really, really good whistler. And one of the things that he whistled was The Four Seasons by Vivaldi. And he said that when he was whistling, prior to that, he tried just saying hello to people, and that still scared them. But when he was whistling, people would smile back at him. Now, you see that there are several stereotypes at play here, right? The stereotype of this person must be dangerous because of the color of his skin and because of his age and perhaps because of the way he's dressed. But there's also the stereotype of, oh, Vivaldi, he must be okay, right? Now, this is not a message to the world that if you want to be accepted, you have to whistle Vivaldi, right? No matter what the color of your skin. I can't even think of how the Four Seasons goes right at this moment. No, that's Bach. Okay, never mind. And I'm not a good whistler anyway. Anyway. Okay. It's just more of a message of seeing, again, that these stereotypes influence us constantly, that they are unconsciously hanging over our heads like Pigpen's cloud, and we are acting upon them. And then if we are the recipient of the stereotype, we might be identifying with the stereotype and thinking that that stereotype is true for us. And that messes us up. It messes us up. You know, probably everybody here has been stereotyped in one way or another. This is one of the reasons I like this book about Whistling Vivaldi. It's by, I don't remember his name, but anyway, I like it because it's across the board stereotypes. It's how we are all recipients and identifiers with the stereotypes that are placed upon us. You know, when I lived in New York, I would occasionally cross the street if I saw someone coming that looked sinister to me or suspicious. And I could have been accused of being a racist for doing that, but honestly, when I look at it, I crossed the street for people of all skin colors, and it had, when I really analyzed what is that about for me, it has much more to do with body language and energy. You know, having worked in a mental health field for many years and just sort of knowing what energy feels like when it's possibly volatile and possibly dangerous, I just was hypersensitive to that. So I would cross the street for various reasons when I lived in New York. And even now, if I run into somebody that feels, fragmented to me, I sometimes will keep my distance for my own safety. So, again, that's what stereotypes are about, is that they're creating safety. And sometimes they may be useful, but often they are not. And our conversations, our deep listening, which I'm going to hopefully inspire all of us to do more of next week, in the coming week, is to help us rise above those stereotypes, see how we are being stereotyped and how we're identifying with the stereotypes, but also looking at how we might be stereotyping others. And we've all done it. We've all done it based on race and orientation and gender and political views and ideology. You know, it's all just, we just do it all of the time because we like our tribe and we want to be with our people, and it's difficult for us to recognize that the other tribe might have something to say too. This is a hard talk, y'all. It means I'm going to have to do it. Ew. Okay. It means I'm going to have to listen more next week. And that's going to be hard because I want to stay stuck in my own opinion. I really really do. It's very comforting to have your own opinion, isn't it? Am I the only one? Am I like the only loser here who doesn't want to do this work? Okay. So there's that. There's our tendency to stereotype that works against all of us. And then there's this other thing that happens. And that has to do with the frailty and the inadequacy of language in terms of capturing reality. You may not know this, but at home, I live with somebody who is incredibly literal and concrete, and it's not Hugh. It's Alexa. Oh my gosh. That girl. Man, and if you don't have Alexa, you know, it's a thing that you talk to and you tell it what music to play, etc. And it's same like Siri, I suppose. I don't have Siri, but I've tried to call Alexa Siri and she doesn't answer because she's very concrete. The other day I wanted to hear the soundtrack of the musical Nonsense. I was getting ready to do high dusting, which means I was probably procrastinating about writing or something. And I wanted to hear Nonsense because I'm working on this project with musical theater quotes and pictures of my animals that some of you have seen on Facebook. And so I said to Alexa, "Alexa, play the soundtrack of Nonsense." Well, Alexa did not hear Nonsense. She heard a song called Nonsense. Does anybody know that song? Here's somebody laughing. You may know it. So, not now. Don't do it now. But if you want to hear Nonsense, go home and ask Siri to play Nonsense, because it starts off with a very bad word. It's a rap song that starts off with a bad word. And I had it turned way up because I was dusting all over my house. I live next door to a Christian minister. And Alexa's going, rah, 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 rah. And I'm like, say, "Alexa, stop, stop, stop." Oh my goodness. It's not like I don't like rap. I like rap. I like, as Alexa says, I like rap. Play Sir Mix, play Baby Got Back. And she'll go, "Baby Got Back by Sir Mix a Lot." Oh, bless your heart, Alexa. But how is that like us? You know, if I had said play Nonsense and somebody had called me that word, I would have been like, "What do you mean by that?" Right? But she's just reacting to the way she's programmed, as most people that we communicate are. Most people are reacting to everything that they have experienced in their lives that is focused on this one particular moment. I was listening to some podcasts the other day that talked about how when we judge somebody, when we judge their opinion, when we judge their thoughts, when we judge their feelings, it's as if we are discounting their entire lives that brought them to this moment. Now, it may be different than what we think, but we can at least try and understand it versus saying, "You're wrong, I'm right, end of story," right? So she was just programmed to do what she was doing, and I could have reacted in a certain way, but really that's how we all are. We are all programmed by virtue of our experience and by virtue of our relationships and by virtue of what media we see, you know, by virtue of what television shows we watch, what we listen to on the radio, all of that creates that cloud around us that may be a very lovely cloud, but it sometimes limits our view so that we can't have a really clear picture of the beautiful child of God that is sitting before us. And I gotta tell you, it's even harder when you're wearing a mask and you're 6 feet apart. So we're being called to a higher level of spiritual practice in this ashram called the COVID-19 virus pandemic. Higher level of spiritual practice. So I've talked about some of the strikes that are against us in terms of our relationships and our ability to listen and our inability to listen, but what can we do instead? You know, there's a lot of different things, and I think if I were to post a question on Facebook, people on Facebook in the church community and the center community would have great, fantastic answers. But the main thing that came up for me, and I think somebody even said this in the feed that we posted yesterday, was to listen not for the sake of wanting to argue your point, but for the sake of understanding theirs. And that's really different. Listening for the sake of understanding. It takes a certain amount of confidence, doesn't it, to know that I am secure in my position. I'm so secure in my position that I can actually listen to your position and see if I can understand it. I may not agree with it. I may respectfully have to say that I don't agree, but I can listen and see if I understand. And that's, I think, part of what builds community, is that willingness to move towards understanding versus right and wrong. One of the people that I've been working with recently in service space said that there are 10,000 ways, at least 10,000 ways, probably 10 million ways to think about anything, but there's really only one way that we all want to feel. And I thought about, you know, what is that one way that we want to feel, and how do we get past all of the chatter of thoughts into that place that we want to feel? And I think at the core of a lot of this, what I'm talking about today, is that we want to feel the sense of belonging. Like we want to belong. We want to belong to something. We want to belong to something that is greater than us. And certainly we belong to the beloved, but we want to have that belonging reflected in our relationships. And so I think that that sweet and divine and innocent sense of wanting to belong is sometimes what sparks tribalism, what sometimes sparks our opinions and our desire to change other people. We want you to think like I do so that we can all belong together. And the truth is that we are all connected by something greater than opinion. We all belong to love. And that even if we don't think alike, we can love. We can love beyond the appearances of differences in opinion. And you know, in that book that I was reading, Whistling Vivaldi, I'm not that far into it, but he was talking about an early study that he did that was about underperformance in colleges. You know, they were measuring performance by grades, which is not always the best way to measure performance, but he was noticing that minority students that had a high IQ and very similar SAT scores to their non-minority counterpoints, that they were not doing as well in school. And he was able, through a series of questions and a series of studies, identify that perhaps what was happening was that they were missing the sense of belonging. That they were in a college situation where they felt like they were left out in some ways. And so that belonging was key, and belonging is key to all of us. So I'm curious. I wish this was a class so we could do more participation, because I'm new at this. I'm used to thinking my own opinions and telling everybody what to do, right? Right? Yeah. And I want to learn more about cultivating belonging and listening for understanding. So I get to practice on all of you, and we all get to practice on each other, and you can practice at home and practice everywhere. I think that would be so awesome. And to continue this conversation about how we're doing with it. How we're doing with it and what's happening for us. Facebook may not be the place to do it, okay? There is sometimes not a lot of belonging on Facebook. There's arguing and whatnot. Also, Nextdoor View. Anybody part of Nextdoor View? You know what that is? It's an app where, let me be polite. Let me not be polite. Basically, you listen to your neighbors whine about what's wrong with the neighborhood. Oh, that's the opposite of what I'm telling people to do, but that's okay. I'll do better next time. So, and by the way, that's, you know, we have to have a little grace with ourselves because this stuff isn't easy. Anyway, Nextdoor View, I actually decided to apply some of this stuff on Nextdoor View, and I want to give you this example as to how it works. And I, again, chose something that is not politically charged or racially charged or other charged. It's something that is charged for me, because you get to be critical of your own people, okay? And my people do not like firecrackers. Okay. If you like them, I still love you, okay? But my people do not like firecrackers, and I've heard that it's sort of a United States thing that's going on right now, but it certainly is very present in Santa Paula, where there is a ton of firecrackers going off, starting June 1st and still going on, not as bad as it was, but lots and lots of firecrackers. So all of Nextdoor was focused on the evils of people who are setting off firecrackers. And I was right with them, because animals die. Animals get out and they get lost and they get run over. Somebody's horse died. It's disturbing to veterans with PTSD. It's disturbing to others who have disabilities. It's disturbing to infants and young children. So I was all over this no fireworks campaign. I wasn't saying much, but I was just like, yeah, yeah. I was pressing a lot of likes. And then this one guy got on, and he said, I like fireworks. Will I still be welcome on this site? Who said that? Jennifer. That's so funny. For those of us in our Facebook audience, Jennifer Hadress said no. Sorry. This is like the ritual shunning and shaming that they have in other religions. And I know she could take it because she's got a sense of humor. So I did actually look at that, and I decided that I don't like fireworks, but I like inclusivity more than I don't like fireworks. And so I posted to the guy and said, I don't like fireworks, pretty much what I just said, but I want to welcome your opinion on this site because I like inclusivity and diverse opinions about things. I got in trouble. but not a lot of trouble. You know, I got the thing, stereotypes. Somebody who likes fireworks, somebody who is accepting of fireworks, must mean that they don't have any animals, that they don't know any veterans that are struggling, they don't know this. And somebody wrote back, if you had animals, you wouldn't feel that way. I'm like, oh no, I do have animals. Let me count the ways that the animals respond to the fireworks. And it's really painful. It's very painful to watch what the animals go through. But I still really wanted to support this guy for expressing a diverse opinion. And you know why. You know why. If you've been coming here for a while, you know that in the third force, the affirming factor and the denying factor are important to focus, to hold up both of those ends of the spectrum and to allow that tension, that dynamic tension between the two to be. If you just squish the denying factor, that tension is not going to be there. And that tension is what invites the third force in to give birth to something greater. To give birth to something that is better. So I put the third force on Next Door View, and I didn't call it that because I didn't know anybody would understand it. I knew nobody would understand it, but I just said, you know, what if there is a way? What if there is a way that people that like fireworks can have their fireworks, and those of us with animals can feel safe too? I don't know what the answer is, but let's see if there's a way. And wouldn't you know it, somebody came up with a plan. Now, I don't know that they're going to actually do it. As many of us know, there is a huge gap between an idea and implementation. But people were actually starting to think about that maybe people who like fireworks have rights to, and maybe they can go someplace else and do them, or maybe the time frame can be limited so it's not every day from June 1st until whatever today is, you know? So, but you see what I mean? That is planting a seed for the third force, for something greater to take over, something greater than my opinion versus your opinion. It's opening up for the universe's opinion. For the universe's, opinion's not the right word, but for the universal good that wants to come through every situation where it appears that there is a conflict. You know, the thing about the law of good, that there is always good unfolding, is that even when we don't use it, it remains perfectly intact. It is stretched in smiling repose, waiting for us to welcome it in and to create the space for it to be. But often, and this is the paradoxical part, which means that it's probably true, often for us to welcome good in, it means that we need to become uncertain. We need to let go of our polarized opinions, be willing to be vulnerable in our conversations and in other ways, and to allow the greater yet to be to emerge through your opinion is here, my opinion is here, let us hold it together and see the greatness that can evolve from this appearance of conflict, which is really something wonderful. If we can sit in the paradox and the uncertainty of that, and it's not easy, even Cynthia Bourgeau, who wrote the book about the third force that I taught last year, she talks about paradox tolerance and uncertainty tolerance, and it is not easy for us humans. But if we can just allow that to be, and just feel our feelings as they come up and say, wait, 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 maybe there's something better here, then that has the capacity to make lasting and sustainable change in the way that we do everything. Little step-by-step, incremental steps of holding the third force. You know, I'm like Mother Teresa. You don't have to go to Washington and do this right away. You don't have to go to the government in California and do this right away. Just do it with the person who's in front of you. Do it with what is coming up for you. Start there, and then if it's supposed to get bigger, it will. Start where we are. Practice these principles. Cultivate uncertainty. Recognize that that needing to feel certain is often a crutch so that we don't feel something deeper. Hold the third force and call forth that law of good that is always waiting to express and bless all beings. I'm going to end with a quote here that is repeating what Hugh read in the reading, because I just think it's so relevant to what we're saying today. It is very difficult to give up our certainties, our positions, our beliefs, our explanations. These help define us. They lie at the heart of our personal identity. Yet I believe that we will succeed in changing this world only if we can think and work together in new ways. Most of us do see things in our life in the world that we would like to be different. If that's true, we have to listen more, not less. And we have to be willing to move into the very uncomfortable place of uncertainty. Yes, it is uncomfortable, but we have each other. We can, as I said last week, we can be clumsy midwives with each other, dropping the baby occasionally, allowing ourselves to be that place where we can experiment and see what we can do better and see how we can be different and see how we can be more open to the good that is beyond polarized opinions. Rumi's field, the land between right doing and wrong doing, where the world is too full to talk about. Let's go to that place now and let us pray.